Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Murder at the Cathedral by Francis Evesham, narrated by Jennifer M. Dixon. Cathedral Cafe. Libby Forrest and the enormous sheepdog Bear climbed the steep street to Wells Cathedral. With no cats to chase, Bear turned his attention to the human passers-by in an attempt to plant a slobbery doggy kiss on each face. Libby's cheeks flamed as she steered the animal through Penniless Porch, the archway leading to the green lawn in front of the cathedral. "I almost wish I hadn't agreed to look after you. The sooner Max gets home, the better." They paused at last, Libby's eyes drawn to the statues carved on the building's stunning west front. She raised a warning finger at the wriggling dog. "You're on your best behavior." The last thing she needed was a spat with Louis, the cathedral cat. They navigated the spiral stairs to the cafe without incident, and Libby poked her head round the door. Conversations buzzed amid enticing smells of cake and spice, but Libby was immune to food. Cakes and chocolates were her business, and she spent most days mixing and tasting, surrounded by sugar. On a rare free morning, she stuck to coffee. She spotted Angela Miles at once, immaculate grey locks teased into a neat French pleat, pearl earrings dangling from tiny ears. Her friend raised a leather-gloved hand in welcome. Libby tugged at her thatch of damp brown hair. She should have visited the hairdresser weeks ago. Pulling a dog treat from the jumble in a pocket of her parka, she bribed Bear to lie down under the table. Angela stirred a steaming cup of coffee.
"So, your son's getting married in the cathedral?"
"His fiancée has family connections. Her mother grew up two streets away. They were lucky to find a vacant date for the wedding. The cathedral gets booked up in the summer, but there's a cancellation in June." Angela's attention had drifted. Libby followed the direction of her friend's gaze. A familiar figure occupied a table in the corner, her back to the room. Even at a distance, the back-combed haystack of hair was unmistakable. Libby would recognize Mandy, her lodger and apprentice, anywhere. She rose to wave.
"Hey, Mandy!"
Angela tugged her arm.
"Shh! Don't interrupt. She hasn't seen us and she's having a row with Steve."
That young man, Angela's nephew and Mandy's boyfriend, sported spiky dyed black hair and a tight T-shirt. He banged a fork on the table.
"Suit yourself," he snapped,
face red and angry. Libby's eyes met Angela's.
"We shouldn't eavesdrop."
They turned away, full of good intentions, but the fight proved irresistible. Steve's unlikely romance with Mandy had lasted almost a year, even surviving his move to study music in London, but the relationship looked under strain today. Libby caught only fragments of angry whispers.
"You could if you wanted to," Steve hissed.
Mandy wailed.
"You don't even try to understand."
Libby missed the rest, as succumbing to guilt, she dragged her attention back to the reason she and Angela had arranged to meet. From the depths of her bag, she retrieved sketches of the bride's wedding dress, samples of lace, and lists of guests. Angela settled a pair of reading glasses on her nose, leaned both elbows on the table, and examined the plans, cooing with approval.
"What a gorgeous dress! I love a fishtail, don't you? Sarah will look stunning."
She sat back.
"Now, tell me about the cake. That's your department, isn't it? What are you going to make? Sponge cake? Fruit? How many tears? I bet you can't wait to start."
Libby avoided her friend's eye. "They want cheese."
"Cheesecake? That's unusual, but I suppose you could make it look good."
"Not cheesecake. Cheese. Three different varieties, all produced in Somerset. Cheddar, brie, and buffalo. One for each layer of the cake. Sarah's father's a dairy farmer." Angela's eyes opened wide.
"So,
You won't be icing the biggest and best wedding cake in Somerset after all.
I had such plans. Their laughter died as Mandy's voice rose.
Don't you dare call me a stupid child. I've got a job, you know. I can't come running down to London every time you snap your fingers. Ask your friend Alice. She'll be there in a second.
A hush fell throughout the cafe, half embarrassed and half expectant. Mandy threw a handful of coins on the table and stamped out. Steve scrambled to his feet as if to give chase, but stopped, paused, appeared to make up his mind, and flopped back into the chair. Angela peered over the rim of her reading glasses, muttering,
"Follow her, Steve, you idiot!"
But the young man sipped coffee, as though quite unaware he was the centre of attention. Only a spot of pink on each cheek gave the game away. Angela sighed.
"That'll teach me to eavesdrop. I was hoping they'd stay together for good and maybe even get married. I know they're young, but they seem so happy."
Libby sorted the wedding plans into a pile. "Do you think that's the end of the relationship? Perhaps they're not as well suited as we thought." Mandy had been on cloud nine recently, raising the friends' hopes of a long-term romance. "It's a shame, but they're still young. Living so far from each other must be a strain." She put her papers back in the bag. "I remember Alice, very glamorous, and a musician like Steve. Maybe she's a better match for him. But I'm sorry for Mandy. It seems her heart's about to be broken." Angela rearranged packets of sugar in the flower-painted china container. "Look at us, worrying about Steve and Mandy as if they're our children. Mandy's almost a third child to me, now Ali and Robert have grown up and left home. She's tidier around the house than they were, though." Angela looked thoughtful.
"I never had children of my own. Didn't think I had maternal instincts until Steve's motorbike accident. That hit me for six."
"You were like a tiger with her cub," Libby recalled, "and you spent every day at the hospital until you were certain he'd recover." Angela laughed.
"I suppose you never stop wanting to look after them, do you?"
The excitement died away. The cafe returned to its normal state of soporific calm, and Bear rested his head on Libby's lap, eyes pleading for treats. As she tickled his favourite spot, just behind a front leg, Angela's phone rang. She made an apologetic face.
"Sorry, do you mind if I take it? It's the verger. I expect he's calling about my shift this afternoon."
Angela worked in the cathedral as a volunteer guide. She answered the phone with a cheery, "Hello," but the smile froze on her face. Colour drained from both cheeks, leaving Angela pale and shocked. Her lips moved, but no sound came. Her eyes flickered. Libby put out a hand, afraid her friend was about to faint, but Angela recovered enough to talk.
"Are you sure? It can't be true. I mean, it was only yesterday."
Her hand shook and the phone fell, spinning and rattling, onto the floor.
"Is everything okay?"
Libby bit her lip at such crassness. What a stupid thing to say when it was obvious things were very far from okay. Angela was mumbling, shaking her head.
"It's dreadful. I can't believe it."
She gasped for air. Libby squeezed her elbow. "Breathe out now, slowly." Angela shuddered, regaining control. "That's better. Now tell me, what's happened?"
"It's Giles. Giles Temple. He's been working at the Cathedral Library."
Libby had never met Mr. Temple, but Angela had spoken of him once or twice. Whenever she mentioned his name, her cheeks turned a delicate shade of pink.
"What about him?" He's had an accident."
"Is it serious?" Angela nodded, lips quivering.
"Very. I'm afraid he's dead."
Librarian.
"Is your friend ill?"
One of the women serving at the counter hurried across the room, sympathy in her eyes. She's had a nasty shock. Libby avoided going into details. Everyone working in the cathedral would know about the murder soon enough.
Well, she'd better have a cup of tea, that's my advice. It's the best remedy for shock. Poor Mrs. Miles. I've seen her many times working in the cathedral.
The woman bustled about, bringing a pot and cups on a tray. Libby, with superhuman self-control, asked no questions of Angela as she poured tea, added milk and several spoons of sugar, and waited until her friend drank every drop. As Angela settled the empty cup back in its saucer, hands still shaking, a touch of colour returned to her cheeks. The threat of a fainting fit gradually receded, and Libby gave way to curiosity. "Now give me the facts. What happened?"
"The librarian found Giles this morning when he opened the room. He'd been..."
Angela swallowed and finished in a rush.
"He'd been strangled with a chain."
"A chain? You mean like a necklace?" Angela shook her head.
"No, it's a chained library, you see. The chains are attached to valuable books and bolted to the shelves to prevent anyone wandering off with a priceless volume. So many books in the library are irreplaceable."
Her high-pitched laugh sounded dangerously close to hysteria. Libby concentrated, determined not to miss a single word as Angela explained.
"There are keys, you see. One locks the gate to the library, and another attaches each chain to a book."
"And one of the chains was used to strangle the victim?" Libby winced as the shocking image took shape in her head.
"Yes, the victim's name was Giles Temple. It happened last night. He was working late. He often did."
Angela picked at a tissue, pulling it to shreds. Libby sipped cold tea, trying to make sense of the information.
"Are all the books chained?" "Only those from before the 18th century."
Talking about the details of the library arrangements calmed Angela, so Libby let her talk. At least her teeth had stopped chattering.
"You know, early copies of the King James Version of the Bible, illuminated manuscripts from the 16th century, books of maps, translations of religious books into different languages, all that sort of thing."
Angela screwed the remains of the tissue into a ball, looked round for somewhere to put it, opened her handbag and dropped it inside.
"Which book did the chain the murderer used come from?"
Angela blinked.
"I've no idea. Does it matter? Giles was a historian. I expect the book was part of his research."
"I bet Chief Inspector Arnold will be holding a press conference," Libby murmured. "Nothing he likes more than seeing his name in the papers and his face on the screen, and the national press will love this story. In fact, it's probably on the internet already." Libby fell silent, but her pulse raced. Another suspicious death in Somerset.
"There's more,"
Angela fiddled with the strap of her bag.
"Go on." "They found something else, an object at the scene." "Come again?" "A knitted scarf."
Libby puffed air through her lips. "Anything special about it?" Angela's gaze faltered. She avoided Libby's face and focused on her own clenched hands, where the knuckles gleamed white. At last she took a shaky breath and whispered,
"Hand-knitted in orange wool."
Libby opened her mouth but closed it again. Was a hand-knitted scarf significant? It was winter, after all. Everyone wore scarves and hats. On the other hand, how often did a man wear a hand-knitted garment, especially a bright orange one? Most males never learned to knit, though a few did, of course. Fishermen were famous for it. Hadn't an Archbishop of Canterbury knitted jumpers? Still, he was the exception rather than the rule. Most men wore simple hand-knitting only when the garment was made by a wife, girlfriend, or mother. In other words, a present. Angela's embarrassed reaction suggested Giles Temple's scarf was not a present from his wife. "Come on, Angela, out with it. There's something odd about this. Where did the scarf come from?" Angela looked Libby in the eye, suddenly defiant.
"We've been making scarves at the Knitters' Guild, scarves, hats and gloves, but mostly knitted squares. We're planning to yarn bomb Wells, but it's a secret. We don't want people to know about it. It would spoil the surprise."
"Yarn bombing? What on earth?" Libby tapped a finger against her teeth, struggling to recall an article she'd read.
"Yarn bombing. Wait, don't tell me. I know I've heard of it."
Angela managed a weak smile.
"Got it. You drape lampposts and trees with knitted things."
"Brightly coloured knitting, yes. It's supposed to cheer everyone up, so we thought this was a good time of year to try it, before spring arrives. Folk become miserable in February. It's also meant to celebrate the completion of the renovations at the cathedral."
Scaffolding had obscured the west front of Wells Cathedral for many months.
"Giles Temple knew about this?"
"Oh, yes. So do most of the staff at the cathedral. Even the dean's given it his blessing. Orange is one of the main colours because it's bright."
"That means someone in the guild knew Giles rather well." Angela, restored to calm, pronounced herself ready to leave the cafe, so the two friends and Bear clattered downstairs, the dog panting and waving his tail, already scenting exciting smells from the outside world. Too late, Libby spotted a pile of books making its way up the stairs. She tugged on the dog's lead. Bear skidded to a halt, but the man underneath the books panicked, tried to back away, lost his footing and grabbed at the handrail. The stack of books, magazines and documents exploded from his flailing arms and rocketed high in the air. Libby watched, knuckles jammed against her mouth, as leather-covered books thudded on the floor. A storm of loose papers followed, fluttering in ghastly slow motion to blanket the flagstones. Bear barked, delighted by the new game. Angela shrieked,
"Dr. Phillips, I'm so sorry!"
She bent to retrieve a book, smoothing its Moroccan leather spine. Libby, mortified, shot a look at Bear that sent the animal's tail between his legs and stooped to help.
"My books! My books!" the man muttered, breathless. "What a day! Oh, my goodness me, what a terrible day!"
Angela examined the one in her hands.
"I don't think this one's damaged."
The man stopped collecting paper long enough to glare at Libby through pebble spectacles.
"That dog of yours!"
"I know," she was contrite. "I'm sorry. He's a bit excited."
She stopped talking, running out of excuses. Angela intervened.
"Libby, this is Dr. Phillips, the librarian."
Libby, far too flustered to listen properly, barely registered the words.
"We won't shake hands."
Dr. Phillips drew bushy brows together, drawing himself up to his full height, the shiny top of a bald head barely reaching Libby's shoulder.
"I'm so very sorry,"
Libby stammered. Bear wagged an enthusiastic tail, trying to attract this new friend's attention.
"Just take that animal out of the way and let me pass."
The significance of the pile of books and Angela's introduction finally filtered into Libby's brain.
"You're the librarian?"
"Of course. Who might you be?" "Wait."
He juggled books and pointed with a bony finger.
"I recognize that dog. It belongs to Max Ramshaw, doesn't it? That makes you Mrs. Forrest, the lady who solves mysteries."
"Call me Libby."
He ignored that.
"Today is a very bad day."
He wagged a gloomy head. "We've had a serious incident."
"The verger told us about it." "It's a most dreadful business. You can't go inside, you know. The police have removed the body, but access to the cathedral is strictly limited. The whole area's smothered in crime scene do not enter tape. No doubt I'll find fingerprint chemicals on the books, and they'll be ruined."
The librarian's face crinkled with worry. Bear, disappointed to find this new friend refused to play, whined and stared hopefully at the exit. Libby ignored him, keeping a tight hold on the lead.
"You found the body, I think, Dr. Phillips?"
He nodded. Lying on the floor he was, face all purple, tongue hanging out. Oh, my, that tongue! What a sight! Libby felt sick. She shook her head to rid it of the image.
Could it be an accident?
The librarian pursed his lips.
Planning to investigate, are you? Good idea. The police spend too much time giving out speeding tickets these days. It could be months before they find the murderer. You speed things up, Mrs. Forrest, so we can get back to normal.
He balanced books on the stair rail, scratching his head with one hand.
Now, what did you ask?
Oh, yes, was it an accident? Funny sort of accident, getting a chain round the neck, he chortled. Someone did him in, and that's a fact.
What about suicide? You mean, could he have made a noose from the chain?
The librarian's face wrinkled in thought.
No, that wouldn't work. The ceiling's too high. He wouldn't be able to get up there, even if he climbed on the benches.
Was the chain still attached to a book?
No, just round his neck.
The man seemed to warm to his topic.
I'll tell you a funny thing.
Yes?
The knitted scarf was wrapped round on top of the chain. Strange. D'you see? On top of the chain, not underneath.
He pursed his lips.
Couldn't kill himself first, then wrap a scarf round his neck, could he?
His expression brightened.
At least there wasn't any blood. Don't want blood on that old oak floor. 17th century, you know. Never get the stain out.
Giles Temple. Libby brought Angela back to the cottage she shared with her apprentice, Mandy, and Fuzzy the marmalade cat. She couldn't leave her friend alone to brood. They settled in the living room with Bear guarding the door. Until recently, the room had been functional and reasonably comfortable, but unexciting. Libby's priority had been her state-of-the-art kitchen, where she'd developed recipes and written the book that kick-started her new career in Exham-on-Sea. At Christmas, her son presented her with a book of Danish style called Hygge. The idea of warmth, cosiness, and a happy atmosphere captivated Libby. She bought cushions and a fluffy rug, positioned candles in the empty fireplace, and brought in stools made from tree trunks. She even considered investing in a solid-fuel heater. Bear approved of the changes and spent as much time as possible stretched across the rug, snoring. Even Fuzzy deigned to curl up on the soft fleece cushions. Perhaps the atmosphere would help Angela relax and speak freely. Since leaving the Cathedral Café, she'd been unusually quiet. Even now she remained tense, gripping the arm of the sofa with rigid fingers and biting her lips. Libby brought hot chocolate. Angela gave a wan smile and ran a finger round the rim of her mug.
"It's been a shock. You don't expect people to die in a library."
"That's true," Libby tried to sound non-committal. "I'm not getting involved, not this time. I'm too busy with Robert's wedding and my business and everything else."
Libby planned to set up a private investigation service with Max Ramshaw, who currently worked for one of the more secretive branches of government on financial business, but recently she'd suffered an attack of second thoughts. Not long ago she'd been a recently widowed newcomer in Exham, building a small but successful business. She hadn't wanted a relationship with Max or anyone else. They'd worked together, and she discovered Max's skills fitted well with her own. Besides, the man was undeniably attractive, with bright blue eyes, a sharp intellect, and a huge fund of common sense. Somehow, they'd fallen into an agreement not only to work together, but also to get married. Whenever Libby thought about Max, her heart fluttered. but her head throbbed with questions. Would they tire of one another if they lived and worked too closely together? Could she give up her independence and walk away from the business she'd struggled so hard to grow just as it was taking off? What about Mandy? Libby couldn't let her apprentice down. She needed a few days' breathing space, with time to think and no crime investigations, while Max finished his current assignment. Any inquiry into a suspicious death was best left to the police. Nevertheless, Libby's curiosity continued to nag, insistent as an itch. Asking a few questions wouldn't commit her to anything. It wasn't real investigating, and besides, Angela needed to talk. Libby gave in to temptation.
"Why was Mr. Temple in Wells? Does he have a family?" "His home's in Birmingham. He was married with two children. They're grown up now. He's been coming to Wells for a couple of days every week, working late into the night and travelling home as often as possible."
Angela shot a glance at Libby.
"He's a history lecturer, studying texts from the 16th century and writing a book about old beliefs and superstitions."
Her voice tailed away, but Libby hardly noticed. She'd stopped listening. The thought of the victim's wife had sent a shiver down her spine. The police, probably on the way to Birmingham right now, would have to break the news to Mrs. Temple. Libby pictured a cheerful woman opening a neat front door, her smile freezing on her face as the officer asked permission to come inside. How quickly would realization dawn? When would Mrs. Temple understand she'd become a widow? Her husband had gone forever. He would not return home for dinner that day or any other day. What would she do? Collapse on the floor, scream and shout? Or hide her feelings with a clenched jaw and stiff upper lip until the police left and she could grieve in peace? Libby blinked and forced her focus back to her friend.
"Giles was a lovely man," Angela was saying. "Gentle and kind. I can't imagine why anyone would want to kill him in such a horrid way."
"It's certainly novel, strangled with a chain. What a nasty death." Angela fingered the pearls in her necklace.
"Then there's the scarf."
"Now that's interesting. I wish I could see it. I suppose Giles Temple wasn't a member of the Knitters Guild." Her friend spluttered.
"Not likely. He was pretty old school. You know, women cook and knit, men work and think."
Angela's hand flew to her mouth.
"Oh, dear, that doesn't sound kind at all. I don't mean he was a bully. I'm sure he couldn't have been. He was much too gentle."
Her eyes met Libby's. Both had endured bullying husbands who liked to keep a wife in her place. A guilt twinge reminded Libby she'd felt nothing but relief when Trevor, her own husband, died. But then he'd been secretly money laundering, so Libby had no need to feel guilty. Unfortunately, the habit died hard. Angela pulled out her phone.
"How silly of me! I can show you a photo of Giles taken in the library during a tour."
She flicked through screens on her phone, using a forefinger to swipe awkwardly from one picture to another.
"Here it is."
She angled the phone towards Libby, and the picture disappeared. Angela clicked her tongue.
"I'll never get used to this phone."
Libby laughed, glad of the break in tension.
"Mandy never goes anywhere without her mobile, but I can't get the hang of mine at all. I think you have to be young, preferably under 35.
She crossed the room to sit on the sofa beside Angela, peering over her friend's shoulder as the picture returned. Libby took in the details. Rows of heavy leather-bound books, neatly arranged on wooden shelves, their heavy chains dangling. Nearby, a small group of visitors peered into a glass display case. The camera had caught Giles Temple, one of two men in the group, with his mouth open, His hair was sparse, a rim of grey speckled brown tufts, worn a shade too long for Libby's taste. Round tortoise-shell glasses hooked onto a pair of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?